When I left, I took samples of a couple dozen different types of high explosive fuses, igniters, and other odds and ends I wanted to experiment with, which meant I had to come back on the train. The situation in the military is double-edged. With more than 40% blacks in the Army, and nearly that many in the other services, morale, discipline, and efficiency are shockingly low. That makes it enormously easier for us to steal weapons and also to recruit, especially among the career personnel who resent what has been done to their services. But it also poses a fearful danger in the long run, because the day will come when we must make our move inside the military. With so many blacks under arms, there is bound to be a bloody shambles. While we are cleaning out the blacks and reorganizing the services, the country will be virtually defenseless. Well, I guess it has been planned that way. The next diary entry is dated May 23, 1993. This is my last night in Dallas. I've been here 2 weeks now, and I'd hoped to be heading back to Washington tomorrow, but orders came in this afternoon to go to Denver instead. It looks like I'll be doing approximately the same thing there I've been doing here, which is teaching. I've just finished conducting a crash course in the technology of sabotage for 8 selected activists here, and I do mean crash. This is the first free hour I've had since I arrived here when I wasn't too tired to think. We've been at it from 8 in the morning until 8 at night every day, with only a few minutes off for meals. I've taught the people here virtually everything I know. We started by learning how to build improvised detonators, timers, igniters, and other gadgets from scratch. Then we studied the structure, properties, and performance characteristics of currently available military devices, which can be adapted for various purposes. All my students can now disassemble and reassemble every type of fuse and delay device we studied, blindfolded. After that, we examined a large number of hypothetical targets and worked out detailed plans for attacking them. We considered reservoirs, pipelines, fuel depots, rail lines, air terminals and aircraft, telephone exchanges, oil refineries, power transmission lines, generating stations, highway interchanges, grain elevators, warehouses, and various types of machinery and other manufacturing equipment. Finally, we picked a real target and destroyed it. Dallas's Central Telephone Exchange. That was yesterday. Today we held a post-mortem and criticized the operation in detail. Actually, everything went extraordinarily well. My students all passed their final examination with flying colors. But I did everything possible to guarantee there would be no slip-ups. We spent 3 full days preparing specifically for the telephone exchange. First, we thoroughly pumped one of our local members who had formerly worked in the building as an operator. She described the layout for us, giving us the approximate location of the rooms on each floor which held the automatic switching equipment. With her help, we made a rough map showing the stairwells, the employees' entrances, the guard room, and other pertinent details. Then we prepared our equipment. I decided we would use surgical precision on this job rather than brute force. Besides, we didn't have a sufficiently large quantity of explosives for a brute force demolition job. What we did have were 3 500-foot spools of PETN-filled detonating cord and a little over 20 pounds of dynamite. I broke our 8 activists up into 4 2-man teams. One man in each team carried a sawed-off auto-loading shotgun, and the other carried demolition equipment. 3 of the teams were assigned to the 3 floors of switching equipment, 1 to a floor. Each of these teams was given one of the spools of detonating cord, a 5-gallon can of homemade napalm-like mixture of gasoline and liquid soap, and a delayed-action detonator. The 4th team was given a 20-pound satchel charge and a homemade thermite grenade and assigned to the transformer vault in the basement. The dynamite would wreck the transformers, and the thermite would set the transformer oil afire. About 10 o'clock last night, we were parked in 2 automobiles on a dark side street 2 blocks from the telephone exchange. Every few minutes, a telephone company service truck went through the intersection directly in front of us. Finally, the situation for which we had been waiting occurred. A service truck came to a stop for the red light at the intersection, and there were no other vehicles or pedestrians in sight. We sped out of the side street, blocking the truck fore and aft, while two of our men jerked open the truck doors and ordered the driver into the back at gunpoint. Then we drove all three vehicles back onto the side street and transferred everyone and all our gear into the service truck. That only took a few seconds, but we spent another half hour talking to the telephone serviceman we had kidnapped. With a minimum of prodding, he answered a number of questions we still had about the location and layout of the switching equipment in the telephone building and about the security staff and procedures. We were pleasantly surprised to learn that there was only one armed guard in the building at night, and that he depended upon a direct line to the police substation 5 blocks away for backup in case of emergency. We relieved the serviceman of his uniform and his magnetically coded company security badge, which was needed to unlock the rear employee's entrance at night. Then we tied him securely with wire, gagged him, and drove the truck back to the rear entrance of the telephone building. I was wearing the uniform. Following the serviceman's instructions, I gained entrance to the building while the others remained hidden in the truck. It was then only a matter of a moment to relieve the surprised guard of his gun and beckon to the others to enter. While our four teams fanned out through the building, I found a convenient janitor's closet and used the guard's own master key to lock him in it. From that point, the whole operation took less than 5 minutes. The three teams assigned to the switching equipment worked quickly and efficiently. While the man with the shotgun on each floor herded any employees that were encountered into an office and kept an eye on them, the other man went to work on the equipment. The detonating cord was unreeled and laced through two or three long banks of electronic panels on each floor. Then the demolition man took the 5-gallon can of napalm and sloshed its contents over large sections of the equipment, both those which had been laced with the detonating cord and those which had not. Finally, a time-delayed detonator was taped to one end of the detonating cord.